Okay, I think we can get started in the 201. We do like to start on time. So Rabbi Strochner began by, first of all, before I begin, I want to express my own personal thanks to the Zeichman family, and should be Aliyat Neshama for his parents, for the Zeichmans, and we should come together for happy occasions. Rabbi Strochner began by discussing the issue of Nachem. Should we change the bracha of Nachem? So I want to begin by discussing the issue, should we cancel Tisha B'Av altogether? And this was, of course, a discussion that I was, the Koren Machzor has an article by Rabbi Luchstein. And Rabbi Luchstein mentions when he comes to Israel in 1967, August of 67, for Tisha B'Av, he's davening in Rabbi Gorin Shul. And before he's the chief rabbi, and they said half a kina, and they closed the kina, and everybody walked out. They said there's no Tisha B'Av anymore. It's over. This we're in no mood for Tisha B'Av, and he was not comfortable with that. And they explained how Rav Soloveitchik explained the importance of why Tisha B'Av is so important. The thing Rabbi Strochner addressed, and we understand. I think you know, in the aftermath of 1967, is a little bit different than it is today. We understand the need for Tisha B'Av, the Sinat Chinam, et cetera, et cetera. But the truth of the matter is the Gemara already, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, the editor of the Mishnah, the Gemara tells us in Megillah that Rabbi did three things. He planted a tree, Natanatia on Purim. Okay, very nice. He took a bath on Shiva Sarvatamus. Okay. And he wanted to be Oker Bikeshla Akor Tish Abav. He tried to uproot to get rid of Tisha B'Av, below Hodulo, but the rabbis didn't agree, and the rabbis didn't agree only on Tisha B'Av. There's no problem to bathe on Shiva Sarva Tammuz, and there's no problem to plant the tree on Purim, but to get rid of Tisha B'Av, that they wouldn't let him do. Now, of course, the question is, how in the world could Rebbe get rid of Tisha B'Av? Now, Tosfot already asked that question, and it's fascinating where his question is coming from. The Tosfot ask, how could he dream of getting rid of Tisha B'Av? The Gemara says that whoever doesn't mourn for Tisha B'Av won't merit to see the nechama, the comfort of Tisha B'Av, of Yerushalayim, that the God redeeming Yerushalayim. I would have thought to ask, what do you mean? We have to fast. In other words, this is a peripheral reason. And then Tosfot said, how can you get rid of a fast? It was established by rabbis, and one court is not allowed to undo the ruling of another court. These are not mainstream questions. He didn't say, you have to fast. These are peripheral questions. So Rabbi Strochner really addressed that issue, that the Navi Zechariah tells us that when we're in a period of neither oppression of the Jews, even though the temple is yet to be rebuilt, it's ratzu mitanim, ratzu ein mitanim. People have a choice whether or not they want to fast. Now, it's interesting. We know that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi had actually a good relations with the Roman Emperor Antoninus, that the Gemara reports that a very warm relationship. This was after a couple of generations after the Hadrianic, persecutions, and relations with Rome had changed. So perhaps Rebbe was of the opinion that it's not so important. We wanted to get rid of Tishvah. If you don't want to fast, you don't have to fast. And Rebbe presumably wanted to establish that it's for the Jewish people. And but the rabbis did not agree. Tosfot has a different explanation, but maybe later we can go into that. But that's important for us. So that's one. That's what the Gemara seems to say. Very, very fascinating. Then the Gemara continues. No, they quote the opinion of Rav Zavda. That's not exactly what happened. What happened is that year Tisha B'Av was on a Shabbat, like most years when it's on Sunday. The ninth of Av fell on Shabbat, and Tisha B'Av was going to be pushed off to Sunday. And Rabbi Yehuda Nasi felt, since we pushed it off already, we fast on Tisha B'Av, we mourn on Tisha B'Av. There's no point to mourning on the 10th of Av. So we missed it this year. We got, I don't know, a lucky break, or I might even, argue an unlucky break. I think Tisha B'Av is such an important day, as much as we don't like it. It's such powerful and can be an inspirational and day of growth. But whatever it is, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi is being interpreted to have said, no, that since it's the fast day is over, we missed the fast day, we're not going to fast on Sunday anymore. We have this concept of avar yomo batel korbano, that there's certain mitzvot that have to be done. You know, if you miss matzah on Pesach, if you miss the night of the Seder, you can't make it up on the next night. You miss davening one day, you don't make it up. We have a notion on the same day you can make up an extra tefillah, but you can't keep making up things. So that's what Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi tried to. Apparently, when Tisha B'Av was on a Shabbat and gets pushed off to Sunday. Of course, we don't have that choice. This year, Tisha B'Av, of course, is really on a Sunday. The question is, of course, and I would add one other thing. In other words, Tisha B'Av is the day where God is very distant from us. We said it in, it's based on a pasuk in Eicha, God does not hear our tefillot, satam tefillati, that our prayers can't reach heaven. We didn't put on tefillin until this morning. On the 10th of Av, we're back to our relationship with God. There is a wall that separates us on Tisha B'Av that does not exist on the 10th of Av. So what's the point? What's the point of fasting on the 10th of Av? Now, why did the rabbis disagree? This view of Rebbe, the Gemara says, lo hodulo, they didn't agree. And then the Gemara quotes, tov shnai min achad, better two than one. Ah, Rav Zavda, I like your explanation. That's great. Of course, Rebbe was never thinking of getting rid of Tisha B'Av on a permanent basis. He was only thinking of getting rid of it on the years when it's Shabbos and pushed off to Sunday. But the rabbis didn't agree to that either. We all know that when it's in Nitra, when it's pushed off, so perhaps there's certain leniencies or the leniencies when the fast day is over. But basically, we fast like any other year. So apparently, the rabbis either they saw Tisha B'Av as just more than that day. That yes, we fast on that day, but especially as we've been talking about, you bring in many tragedies into Tisha B'Av. That Tisha B'Av doesn't just commemorate that particular day. So the day, what's the purpose of commemorating Tisha B'Av? To improve ourselves, to do better. So whether you put the 9th or the 10th of Av is not so important. It's not crucial. It's not going to be enough to nullify the fast. One could also argue, and Tosfot actually gives, it's a funny answer, Tosfot says, what do you mean Rebbe was going to get rid of Tisha B'Av? So one approach they have to this answer, they said is, well, he was going to move it to the 10th of Av every year, because as many, we know that we continue some of the morning practices into the 10th of Av, and the reason we do that is because the temple was actually burnt, according to our tradition, the fire was started towards the end of the day of the 9th, and it burned through the night and into the day of the 10th. So perhaps, just historically speaking, the rabbi is saying, well, of course, we can fast on the 10th just like on the 9th. It's just as terrible what happened on the 10th and on the 9th. Or you can view it in a broader vision, that Tisha B'Av is a broader message. Like I say, the day is very important. And if we can't have the day on the 9th, we have to have it on the 10th. So that's already have a whole discussion in the Talmud about perhaps getting rid of Tisha B'Av either permanently, as strange as that sounds, and perhaps that was the one idea that entered the Gemara at one point, or at least when it falls on Sunday, and Shabbos is pushed off to Sunday. Now, the Mishnah does record what happens when Tisha B'Av is on Friday. So the way our calendar is set up, Tisha B'Av never falls on a Friday. We'll come back to that. But Tisha B'Av can never be on a Friday. But in the time of the Mishnah, when we had the original way of sanctifying our new moon, there's no reason Tisha B'Av could not be on a Friday. So the Talmud quotes the view of Rav Meir that we do not, when Tisha B'Av's on a Friday, you don't fast the whole day. You have to end the fast before the day is over, before Shabbat enters. You don't want to enter Shabbat on an empty stomach and sort of, you know, that's not how we enter Shabbat. The halacha of Kavod Shabbat, the difference between Kavod and Oneg is Kavod is what we have to do in advance of Shabbat to prepare. And Oneg is what we do on Shabbat itself, the enjoyment on Shabbat. So to prepare for Shabbat, we have to eat a little bit. Can't eat too much because you have to want to have a nice meal on Shabbat. But the Mishnah quotes the view of Rabbi Meir that when Tisha B'Av falls on a, on Friday, we don't complete the fast. Interesting, the Rambam says we don't hold like this view. Again, there's a resistance to taking off any part of Tisha B'Av and the halacha. I mean, we don't really deal with this, but the halacha, as is accepted by our major their codifiers, is that we would fast if Tisha B'Av fell on Friday. And I guess we can see that because when Asar B'Teveth, which is the only fast day that can fall on a Friday, that's sort of the beginning of the whole process of Tisha B'Av. That's when they surrounded the walls. The Babylonians surrounded the walls, put Jerusalem under siege to begin the process of Tisha B'Av. So that's the only fast day that in our calendar can fall on a Friday. And we do fast. We do fast through Shabbat. I guess living in the Western Hemisphere, it's not... not the Northern Hemisphere, not so far, it's not so hard. Sarvatevitz in the middle of the winter, but nonetheless, they have an interesting point. What about fasting on Sunday in general? So it would appear the Gemara in the Mishnah in Masechet Tanit describes the service that was done every day in the Beit HaMikdash. We know that Kohanim, the main function of Kohanim was not to work in the temple. Your typical Kohen worked in the temple 2, maybe 3 days a year, perhaps, and then he did a little bit more on Yontif. But the Kohanim were divided into 24 Mishmarot. One of the keynote this morning, if you said it was about the loss of the 24 Mishmarot, there were too many Kohanim. How many people did you need to work in the temple? So the Gemara says they had 8, and they moved to 16. They moved it to 24 Mishmarot. But the Kohanim represent us. So they worked one week every 6 months. And then within that week, they only worked one day. The Mishmarot were divided into Batei Av. And so each Kohen only really worked one day in his week. But he was there sort of on call the whole week. And but the Kohanim were representatives of the Jewish people. And for every, the 24 Mishmarot, the Jewish people were divided into 24 Ma'amadot, they're called. So we have like a parallel group of Kohanim would work in the temple. And during those days, the people, the Anshei Ma'amad, the Yisraelim, would gather in Batei Knesset. I believe Jonathan Sachs, in his introduction to the Siddur, claims this might be the beginning of the Beit Knesset, the early formation in Jewish history of shuls, where in the temple, the Kohanim are doing the service, and the Jews are living all over the place, and they go into their Batei Knesset, and they would actually lean Ma'aseh Bereshit. They would lean from Bereshit, the 6 days of creation or 7 days of creation. And because Ilmalei Ma'amadot, if not for them, lo nitkaimu shamayim v'aretz, the heaven and the earth, the world existed because of the service. Torah avodah, u'gmilu chasadim. This is one of the pillars, the foundations of the world. It's a fascinating idea. And so it's very important. So we would read Ma'aseh Bereshit. They're keeping the world alive, this work in the Beit HaMikdash. And the Mishnah says that they would fast for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. The Ma'amad was the entire week, but they only fasted Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So we already learned Friday is not a good day to fast. Kavod Shabbat. So that there's no disagreement. They did not fast on Friday. Of course, they did not fast on Shabbat. But the Mishnah says they didn't fast on Sunday either. They didn't fast on Sunday, and from days of rest and enjoyment, eating and having a nice meal, to yigiya and to anit, hard work and feeling not good, and fasting, biyamutu. It's an unbelievable expression. They'll die. So the commentaries say it doesn't mean it literally, but it's very unhealthy to go from, quote unquote, the joy of Shabbat, and in 1 minute to switch to Tisha B'Av, from eating and partying where you have to eat, to fasting, the Yamutu. So we don't have fast days on Sunday. Now, this line that they wouldn't fast because you don't want to go from the joy of Shabbat to the unjoy of fasting so quickly, it's if you look in the Gemara, there's a bracket around it. And already many people point out this is not included in many of the original manuscripts. It's not in every Girsa. And it, because the Gemara itself has a discussion of why they don't fast on Sunday. And the Gemara gives three reasons why you cannot fast. The Anshei Ma'amad cannot fast on Sundays. Rav Yochanan, okay, to one of the reasons is not applicable really to us and to our case. One is because it's the third day since the creation, right? We're reading Maaseh Bereishit, when man was created on the sixth day, and the third day we're very weak, Friday, Shabbos, and Sunday. Like the third day after a bris, we're considered extra weak. So we don't want people to fast. Okay, that applied for the Anshei Ma'amad, who are sort of reenacting the creation of the world, but that doesn't apply on Tisha B'Av. But the other reason the Gemara says is we don't fast because our neshama yetera is taken away. The neshama yetera, our extra soul, what exactly that means, I cannot tell you, but the extra soul that we're given on Friday evening is taken away on Saturday evening, and we're very weak and we have to eat. It's not a time, Sunday's not a good day to fast ever. Then Gemara quotes the opinion of Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan was the first generation, the main Amora in the generation after Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, in the generation of the after the Mishnah, the beginning of the Gemara. Rav Yochanan is the most important of the Amoraim living in the land of Israel. Lived a very long life, very tragic life. I guess on Tisha B'Av we can mention that Gemara says he lost 10 children, and he would go around with the tooth to comfort people. I don't know exactly to comfort people, but he would tell people, this is the tooth of his youngest of 10 children. Very, very, very tragic. But Rabbi Yochanan is really the most important and the Amoraim of Eretz Yisrael in the generation after the Mishnah. So he says, the reason you don't fast on Sundays, Mifnei HaNotzrim. That's what it says. Now, it's, by the way, an interest, Notzri we normally associate as a Christian. It doesn't say Mifnei HaAkum because of idolatry. It's saying Mifnei HaNotrim. So there are three explanations. I just find this is just a fascinating piece. Number one, Rabbeinu Gershon explained, dangerous. If we're going to be fasting while the non-Jews are celebrating, where Sunday is their holiday, their day of rest, their day of religious observance, and the Jews are fasting, it means we're mourning when the non-Jews are fasting. It doesn't look very good. And we have to be afraid that what could happen. We have Mishum Eva, we have all these decrees in our tradition, things we do not do or we do in order to prevent enmity between Jews and non-Jews. So that's one explanation. The Marsha says it cannot be, because this Mishnah is talking about when the temple is standing, right? It's talking about the Anshei Ma'amad, the people are going in to pray while the services are being conducted in the Beit HaMikdash. So the Jewish people, what are they afraid of? So he says they were afraid that when they fasted, they wouldn't work. The people of Ma'amad, they sent a day in learning and prayer. They didn't go to work that week. So he says people would say, no, the Jewish people are converting to Christianity. We also hold it's a yontif. They don't work. That's what we're doing. So we cannot fast because that goes together with not working. And that would give the implication that we're accepting the views of Christianity. It's a fascinating, I just find it an interesting comment, really. And it probably, at least in the Marsha's views, it says a lot about, remember when this is happening, let's say towards the end of the Second Temple period, I mean, it can't be more, Christianity is just beginning, right? Whatever you want to say it, right? It's just starting, but the fear of Jews moving over to Christianity. And the third opinion, which is also very interesting, is that if we fast, the non-Jews will say, we're mourning. I say, we're right. Like the Christian argument that God abandoned the Jewish people, right? That was their argument. That's why they had problems accepting the state of Israel. Because in Christian theology, we rejected their God and we have to wander and we have to suffer. So if the Jews are fasting on Sunday, the non-Jews will go to celebrate. It's like the Mishnah says in Avodah Zarah, we're not allowed to conduct, at least there was a time you're not allowed to conduct business with an idolater right before their festivals, because they may go and give thanks to their God and take their money and use it. But whatever the case may be, those are just sort of really interesting side points. The Mishnah is very clear, and the Gemara is very clear, you cannot fast on Sunday. The Gemara, then we have an additional reason you can't fast on Sunday. The Gemara in Shabbat, by the way, it's this Gemara in Shabbat, Daf 119. It's a tremendous page. Got all kinds of fascinating things there. It's that Gemara lists seven reasons for the destruction of Yerushalayim. The Gemara lists many, many, many different reasons. We'll have to come back to that. Sinat Chinam is just the most famous of the reasons that's listed. But the Gemara in various places lists off various reasons the temple was destroyed or Yerushalayim was destroyed. Whether that's exactly the same thing, that's we can discuss another time. But the Gemara there, right before that discussion, discusses that there's a mitzvah to have what we call a Malava Malka. That the same way we have, and the Gemara equates them, that the meal on Friday, we don't do this. People are lax about this, but I'll speak for myself. I'm lax on this. The Gemara says that the same way we have a nice meal on Friday night, we have to have a nice meal to escort the Shabbat. There's Kiddush and Havdalah, and there's the Sudat Shabbat, and there's the Sudat of Motzei Shabbat. And the Ein Yaakov, the Agadic commentary on the Gemara, quotes from the Mechilta, rabbinic commentary, the Midrash, that Zachor is the meal on Shabbat, and Shamor is the meal on Motzei Shabbat. So for all these reasons, we don't want to have a fast on Sunday. We don't want to have a fast on Sunday. So perhaps when Tisha B'Av falls on Sunday, we should push it off to Monday. Perhaps when it falls on Shabbos, or maybe we fall, maybe you can only go on the 10th, maybe for the 11th, you can't have it. But of course, we don't have that. Now, we also know that Yom Kippur never falls on a Friday or Sunday. The way our calendar is set up, Lo Adu Rosh, right? The first day of Rosh Hashanah cannot be on a Sunday. We never have Rosh Hashanah on a Saturday night, you know, Sunday, Monday. We never have it on a Wednesday, or we never have it on a Friday. There's nothing wrong with Rosh Hashanah on Sunday, Wednesday, or Friday. It has nothing to do with Rosh Hashanah. It's just, if Rosh Hashanah is on a Sunday, fascinatingly, Hoshana Rabbah will be on a Shabbat. And if Hoshana Rabbah is on a Shabbat, Hoshana Rabbah may get discarded on a permanent basis, because in the time of the Talmud, there were big fights. Hoshana Rabbah, who would we ever? Where does it say that in the Torah? Nothing about Hoshana Rabbah. All these extra prayers and Aravot and Mitzvot, we never heard of this. Where's that written? And many people didn't observe Hoshana Rabbah. And you can't bang the Hoshanas on Shabbos. Everybody knows you can blow shofar. No one's going to stop blowing shofar because they didn't blow shofar 1 year on Shabbat. But if 1 year Hoshana Rabbah falls on Shabbat and they don't do Hoshanas, people might get rid of Hoshana Rabbah. This fear of what will happen. The same thing a little bit on the Christians. What will the Christians say? What will happen? What will be the result? So that's why Rosh Hashanah can't be on a Sunday. And Rosh Hashanah can't be on a Wednesday or a Friday, not because of Rosh Hashanah, because Yom Kippur can't be on a Friday or a Sunday. So it's true, by Yom Kippur, the Gemara has a really another powerful reason, that being you can't bury people. You know, halakhically, we don't do this anymore because it's very difficult, or it's rarely done. I shouldn't say, I know of cases where it has been done, but it's very rare that we will bury somebody on Yom Kippur. And you're even allowed to bury a person on the first day of Yom Kippur by non-Jews, and Jews can bury the person on the second day. But on Shabbat and Yom Kippur, we can't do burial, especially in an era before they could keep bodies, you know, cold. They didn't want to go in, you know, 2 days. Somebody, Rachman Elisan, should pass away. So we don't make Yom Kippur on Friday or Sunday. But there's these additional reasons. We don't want to go into Shabbos fasting, and we don't want to end Shabbos fasting. And yet, of course, Tisha B'Av is on a Sunday, probably more than 30% of the time. It's on a Sunday whenever Tisha B'Av is on. It can only be on 4 days of the week, right? The way our calendar is set up, Tisha B'Av can only be, the ninth of Av can only be on Shabbos, Sunday, Tuesday, or Thursday. So Shabbos and Sunday is one, Sunday, or Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday. Those are the only days. And so it's probably more than a third of the time that we fast on Sundays on Tisha B'Av. Why? What happens? So why is Sunday okay to fast on Tisha B'Av? So the simple reason, you say, the tragedy of Tisha B'Av is so great that these are all very nice reasons. Yeah, we don't want you to go from having a nice meal to fasting, and whatever, and we're afraid of what the non-Jews will say, or all these other reasons that a fire should have a Malava Malka. Very nice, but not Tisha B'Av. Some tragedies are so great that breaks all the rules. and therefore we cannot go by our normal parameters. So so Tisha B'Av, we do fast on Sunday, and we do have to go from that, you know, period last night, sort of when you finished eating, like in Toronto, like 8:55. And but Shabbos, it's still Shabbos, but it's also sort of Tisha B'Av. But that's what we have to do this for this terrible day. Now, what I want to spend the rest of the shiur is really developing this theme and really talking it and doing the, you know, talking about Pesach, when the comparison between Pesach and Tisha B'Av. Basically, Tisha B'Av is a reversal of Pesach. Whatever happened on Pesach, the forming of the Jewish nation, was undone on Tisha B'Av. Now, I'm sure many of you know Atbash. The way our calendar works is Atbash Ger Dak Hak, right? That the first day, the first letters of the alphabet, and then the last letters of the alphabet. So the first day, first letters of the alphabet are the 7 days of Pesach, and they correspond to the last letters of the alphabet. So At, Aleph, and Taf is Aleph, the first day of Pesach, which this year, as we all know, was on Saturday night, Sunday. So Taf, Tisha B'Av, is going to be on a Saturday night, Sunday. Beit, the second day of Pesach, was on Shavuot. It was on Sunday night, Monday. So that's when Shavuot was. Gimel, Rosh Hashanah, Gimel Reish, Gimel Rosh Hashanah. So this year, Rosh Hashanah is Monday night. It's very strange this year. Monday, Rosh Hashanah this year is on Monday night of Labor Day. I don't remember, I don't think in my lifetime I can remember ever Rosh Hashanah coming on Labor Day. But what has to happen is Rosh Hashanah has to be early and Labor Day has to be late. You know, you can have one and not the other, but combining. So Rosh Hashanah this year is on Monday night. For those who are interested, there's those who see more than a coincidence in this, the seventh day of Pesach, Zayin and Ayin go together. The seventh day of Pesach is always the same day as Yom HaTzma'ut. So Yom HaTzma'ut is perhaps the recreation of Pesach, the undoing of Tisha B'Av, which we began. But I want to develop this idea that the connection between Tisha B'Av and Pesach, the Atbash, and the fact that it's At, A-Z, it means they are as far apart as you can get, right? Tisha B'Av and Pesach are the two, you know, furthest, are poles apart. So there is a kina this morning that compares Bitzeti mi Mitzrayim, Bitzeti mi Yerushalayim. Goes through basically the Aleph Beit and describes the difference between what happened when we left Egypt and the joy and the rejoicing and all the wonderful things that happened as we entered into the land of Israel, and the sadness and the tragedy and the exile and the torment and then oppression and persecution that followed when we left Yerushalayim, B'tzeiti mi Mitzrayim and B'tzeiti mi Yerushalayim. Now, of course, Pesach is when we were formed as a nation, and of course, Tisha B'Av is when we lost our nationhood. Pesach is, of course, the beginning of our freedom, and Tisha B'Av, these are obvious, but just to mention, and Tisha B'Av begins our long period of oppression. Pesach is our redemption, and Tisha B'Av is the exile. Pesach, when the Jewish people left Egypt, one of the first places they went to was Pi HaChirot, the mouth of freedom. You know, names and places in the Bible are much more than names and places. They represent ideas and ideals. And, you know, you look at the names of the Nisi'im and compare them to the Meraglim. All the tribal leaders all had names. Elzi Eli Tzafan, you know, God is with me. All names representing God and goodness, and the names of the Meraglim, all like our Gadi ben Susi, and very negative names, because the Torah is giving us ideas through the names. So the Jewish people, when they journeyed in the desert, they came to Pi HaChirot, right at the beginning, the mouth of freedom. Because as Rav Soloveitchik explains, a slave cannot speak. A slave, we know what in a democracy, freedom of speech is the hallmark of a democracy. Dictators, they shut down the media. They don't let you speak freely. You can't gather. So to be a free person, that's why Pesach, you have to talk so much, right? Pesach, the word Pesach means Pesach, the mouth speaks. Pesach, freedom and the ability to speak all go together. And of course, I mentioned that Tisha B'Av, we cannot speak. God doesn't hear our prayers. Satam tvilati. He blocks them off. We know we're sitting shiv as a people. So a mourner cannot talk. A mourner is not supposed to talk. You can talk to the mourner and then he can answer. But a mourner doesn't initiate conversation. We're not supposed to greet people, be friendly on Tisha B'Av. So it's not just we're in mourning, but it represents exile and oppression and restriction. The idea of speaking represents our freedom. So I thought the interesting comment, when Pesach fell on Erev Pesach fell on Shabbat this year. So obviously it's inconvenient. I don't think it's so inconvenient for us anymore, whatever. We have lots of conveniences, lots of way to deal with it. I think in some ways it's an advantage. You come into the Seder a little bit more well-rested than people might otherwise come because they're forced to be already before Shabbat ended. But be that as it may, for sure in the time of the temple, having Erev Pesach on Shabbat was not so simple because of the Korban Pesach. And the rabbis would presumably try to avoid it. The rabbis had certain rights to manipulate the calendar, not to accept witnesses. This is even in the time when the calendar was based on what the witnesses had said. The court could delay accepting their testimony, etc. But as the Talmud relates, one year it worked out. They couldn't finagle the system. And Erev Pesach was on Shabbat, and they didn't know what to do. They didn't know what to do. And that's the story of how Hillel rises to become the Nasi of the Jewish people. And nobody knew what to do. So they said, we heard there's this great rabbi. He came from Babel, and he really serviced his teacher, Shmaya Naftalim, really well. He might know. So they went to Hillel, and they asked him, Rabbi Hillel, what do we do when Erev Pesach falls on Shabbat? So he told him, it says in Torah, b'moado, in its time. Because the problem with the Paschal Lamb, the Pesach, the Korban Pesach, is communal sacrifices, the Korban Tamid, we daven Musaf on Shabbat because they have extra sacrifices, right? All the holidays, extra sacrifices. But that's only a communal sacrifice. A personal sacrifice you cannot bring on Shabbat. So what is the Korban Pesach? It's sort of the whole community brings it, but we bring it as individuals. Maybe we don't bring it on Shabbat. What to do? So Hillel explained we have to bring it. And he brought a proof text from what it says in the Torah. And because of that, Hillel becomes the Nasi of the Jewish people. And I think, I don't know, maybe I'm going too far, but I think at least I'll be Drush. There is something to it. Hillel becomes the hero of when Pesach falls on when Pesach falls on a Sunday. And of course, when Tisha B'Av falls on a Sunday, that's the whole point. The calendar is set up that Pesach and Tisha B'Av are the opposite. And of course, it's Hillel who taught that the Klal Gadol B'Torah, the main principle of the Torah, is to love our neighbor as ourselves, to be kind to people. And of course, that's the primary reason that the rabbis give for the destruction of the temple. So even within Hillel himself, Hillel was the one who taught us how to celebrate when Pesach is on a Saturday night and Sunday. And it's when we don't follow the message of Hillel that we have the Tisha B'Av that we do, perhaps. Okay, so that's a little bit. Those are some of the basic things. We'll come out. We'll discuss the Seder in a few minutes. I want to if you look in the Chumash, there's finding. Everything has to be sourced in the Chumash. Everything, Sefer Bereshit is a foretelling of the future. The Ramban's famous principle, Maaseh Avot Siman Levanim, the stories in Bereshit are foretelling what will happen in the future. So, I hadn't really noticed this before, but when God appears to Moshe at the burning bush, so he says, I want you to go to redeem your people. And what does he tell him? What is he going to do? What are the Jewish people going to do when he redeems us? So I don't know if anybody wants to throw in an answer in the chat. But why was God taking us out of Egypt? Don't all answer at once. Okay, so I might have said God's taking us out of Egypt so we can worship him on Har Sinai and he can give us a Torah. The only problem is that's not what it says. The Torah says, I want you to go, and I'm going to take you out of Egypt and bring you to the Eretz Tovar Chava, Eretz Avat Chalav Udvash. I'm going to bring you into the special land. In other words, the purpose of the Exodus was to enter into the land of Israel. The only point where so Moshe says, yeah, that's very nice, but you know, I'm going to go to Paro and he's going to laugh me out of the room. What's he going to do? So that's when God says, you know, tell Paro this little, I don't know if they meant it or not, tell him you're going to worship me from the mountain for 3 days. And then when Moshe goes and he tells the 70 elders that he's going to take them out, again, there's no mention of going to Har Sinai. There's no mention of going to Har Sinai. The purpose of Pesach in the Torah, at least initially, is to go straight to Israel. Now, of course, we have to stop at Sinai, and Sinai tells us what our constitution is going to be in our newly founded state. But I found it quite interesting that the Torah juxtaposes Pesach and our staying in Israel and our forming of a nation, not Pesach and Shavuot the way we normally do it. And if you look at the core text, the basic text of the Pesach Seder from Kitava, which is a story of the Bikurim, right? The farmer giving thanks, right? That's Arami Obed Avi. That's really the story of the farmer. The rabbis could have chosen many ways for us to recount the story of the Exodus, but the rabbis chose, perhaps because it's short and says, whatever the reason is, that's not for now. The rabbis chose these few verses in Parsha Kitavo where the farmer gives a synopsis of Jewish history and he thanks God for coming to the land of Israel. That last part, thanking God for coming to the land of Israel, we don't say in our Haggadah. We say, Arami Obed Avi, our father was a wandering Aramean and he went down to Egypt and the Egyptians oppressed us and we cried out to God. And, you know, and God saw our suffering by Yotzienu Hashem Mitzrayim, and God took us out with a strong hand by Yabienu Al HaMakom Hazeh, and he brought us to the land of Israel. And thank you, God, we have beautiful fruits. Thanking you for bringing us to the land of Israel. There's no mention that God took us out of Egypt in order to go to Mount Sinai. I can understand when God spoke to Moshe, telling him that. But this is the farmer. This is every farmer who came every year to bring the first fruits in acknowledgement to God. And he tells, like Jewish history, we have our forefathers. We went down to Egypt. We suffered. We have to remember our history, our slavery. And now, thank you very God. Thank you very much, God, for bringing us in that. And he skips over Matan Torah. So I just find that a fascinating concept. And which apparently the Torah, I don't say Torah is a means to an end, but the goal of Pesach is to get to Eretz Yisrael. The goal why God chose us as a nation was to form a nation in Israel. It's not to get the Torah. We got the Torah so we could observe it in Israel. The Ramban, you know, the Ramban famously says, it's not based on the Sifri, we say it in the Shema, that Hishamru Lachem Penyitel Levavchem, be very careful or I'm going to exile you from the land. That happened, unfortunately. And Vavadata, but nonetheless, Vavadata Meira, you're going to get kicked out. And you should put on tefillin and put on a mezuzah. In other words, even though we're being exiled from the land, I might have thought the Torah only applies in the land of Israel. That's not a bad assumption. It's a pretty good assumption. So the Sifri, the mention, no. That we don't quite go that far. Hatzivalach, you know, sinim, markers, make for you markers, practice. You have to practice the mitzvot. So when you do come back to the land of Israel, you won't be rusty. I'm not having observed the mitzvot. But it sounds, I don't know, I mean, very, very Zionistic. It is very Zionistic. What can I say? But this Ramban, based on a Sifri, the notion is that all mitzvot, and it's said by the mitzvah of a mezuzah. It's not said by mitzvah of trumot and masrot. A mezuzah has nothing to do with the land. Nonetheless, the only reason, the simple explanation of the Midrash is the only reason we keep mezuzah in Toronto, New York, wherever you live, outside the land of Israel, is that we should be ready when we come back. It's sort of the opposite of secular Zionism. You know, secular Zionism said mitzvot are only important when we're outside the land of Israel. That's what kept us together. Now that we're in Israel, we don't need the mitzvot anymore. And religious Zionism says that really mitzvot are only meant for the land of Israel. Okay, we also have to keep them. Now, I presume this is really talking more the ritualistic mitzvot, but the mitzvot really applies. And that, I think, is really what the Torah is hinting at. When when God comes to Moshe, he doesn't say get the Torah. It's come to Israel. And the farmer says, thank you, God, I'm in Israel. When you're in Israel, the way to set up a state, the way to have a moral, ethical life is to follow the laws of the Torah. But that's not the goal. The Torah is a way to set up a nation. And when we're in Galut, we can't set up that nation. We can only be individual Jews. The Torah can't really be observed. That's why Tisha B'Av is the day of the breaking of the Torah. God cries. God goes into exile with us because it's a loss of the Torah. It's not the breaking of the Luchot on Shivas Arba Tammuz. It's much worse. So the Torah itself, I think, hints to this idea that really Pesach and Tisha B'Av are the two poles. Pesach is our formation, what it's supposed to be, and Tisha B'Av is when we don't live up to the message of Pesach, and therefore they're on the same day, Atbash, but they're, you know, the A to Z and the alphabet. Now, the story of Pesach and Tisha B'Av, okay, that's nice on sort of a one level, but I also think if you look in Sefer Bereishit, we can find the story of Pesach. But I'd ask you, where does Pesach appear in Bereishit? Now, obviously, we don't mean it in a literal sense, right? But where are hints to this story to Pesach in the book of Bereishit? Anybody want to answer? I know it's Tisha B'Av, whatever, but okay.
So
I'm sorry?
Reef
Ben Habtarim. I don't know that that happens on Pesach. What's the connection between that and Pesach?
Not that it happens on Pesach.
There's no direct. No, of course. Yeah. 410 the exile. Correct. But I'm saying Pesach itself. Right. You are correct because the question doesn't make sense. You can't have Pesach 400 years before it happened. But Rush, the story of Lot, somebody pointed out. So, you know, when the angels come to Lot, he serves them, you know, matzah. And Rashi says, it's Pesach. So I went through the Dvar Torah, Jonathan Sachs has a beautiful Dvar Torah on that. What's the connection? But connection, I think, let's discuss that a little bit. Our first encounter with Egypt is soon after Avraham Avinu arrives in the land of Israel. God says, go to Israel, lech lecha mi'artzecha. His father Terach had started the journey already, mysteriously. We don't understand why. We don't understand why he stopped, but the Torah is very clear. The end of Noah, Terach, he must have intuited that there's something special about this land. So Terach starts going to land and he stops in Haran for whatever reason. And God tells Avram to continue the journey, lech lecha, and Avram comes and very soon afterwards, there's famine in the land. And Avram goes to Egypt. That's the story. Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. All there's famine by all three. All three want to go to Egypt. God tells Yitzchak, don't go to Egypt. Yitzchak would have gone to Egypt. But of course, Avram goes, and Yaakov, of course, that's the beginning of the exile. So Israel is a place of famine, and Egypt is the place of plenty. And the Jewish people, Avram Avinu, foretells the descent into Egypt, and he goes to Egypt. And what happens when he leaves Egypt? He's a very wealthy man. Avram comes and he's very wealthy. He's so wealthy that the Roe Mikne Lot and the Roe Mikne Avram can't get along. You know, when people are poor, my father used to tell me all the time, I love Shalom, that he's one of six kids and grew up in the 30s, the Depression years. And Baruch Shem is very, very close to his siblings. And they never fought. It's really true if you knew them. You knew my aunts and uncles. They were very, very close. So we never had any money. We never had money. And there was nothing to fight about. My father was a rabbi of a shul, a large shul for 50 years. And how many times he would tell us, you know, without any details, of course, how many families were torn apart when the patriarch of the family dies and there's money and the kids, you know, there's enough money coming out of the ears of all the grandchildren and they're fighting and fighting. It's so tragic. It's so tragic. But that's happened. That's Roe Miknet, Lot and Roe Miknet, so they couldn't agree. And so Abram was smart. Instead of fighting, go your own way. So where does Lot go? By the way, the pasuk, you know, this is one of it says. Here, let me just quote you the pasuk. It says, "Velona sa'otam achadam." Right, the land couldn't handle them. Kiayu rechusham rab. They had too much money. Velo yachlu l'shevet yachdam. It's like it's so tragic. They had so much money they couldn't sit with each other. Right, he reeved. There was a fight. Ben Roem, it wasn't Avram and Lot, but Ben Roem Mikne Avram, the shepherds of Avram, Ben Roem Mikne Lot, Baknani Vafrizi Azushay Barts, and the Knanis were then in the land. So this is not the time for it, but this pasuk is very, very difficult. What do you mean the Canaanites were then in the land? It sounds like it's being written much later, and this is a whole, you know, and the whole issue was all the Torah, you know, originally there. This is a big discussion. How do we understand the Canaanites were then in the land, as if later? But on a moral level, it's very simple. When the Jewish people are fighting, when Abraham and Lot are fighting, Baknani Asbaratz, that's when the Canaanites are going to be in the land. When as long as the Jewish people, but there's a Reev, Baknani Asbaratz. So the result of Jewish people fighting, Abraham and Lot, I mean, they went, I know it's a little anachronistic, but I think the point is not taken away just because it's a little anachronistic. That's why they were... the Canaanite was in the land. But what happens is Lot settles in Sodom. Why does Lot settle in Sodom? Because it reminds him of Egypt. That's what it says. It's beautiful, the greenery, the lushness. And of course, what happens? It's destroyed. So basically, I would argue that this is the story of Pesach. Abraham and Lot and Sarah. Sarah is redeemed. Sarah is taken as a slave. They come to Egypt and Paro takes her as a slave. And then she gets freed. And then they said, get out of here. Paro says, you know what? I don't want you here anymore. Just like in Egypt. Get out of here. We'll give you lots of money. Leave. This is the beginning of, or the foretelling of the story of Pesach. And then, but unfortunately, Sodom is Tisha B'Av. And tragically, Sodom is never rebuilt. Like, I don't know, Israel would look a lot different if Sodom wasn't there. And it's very sad that money becomes the source of friction. The Yerushalmi, I mentioned the Gemara has many explanations why the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. The Talmud Yerushalmi says, you know why the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed? Because the Jews had too much ahavat mamon. They loved money. They had too much love of money. You can argue love of money and sinat chinam. That's what we're arguing. They go together, unfortunately, all too often. Not always. They don't have to, but they often do. So that's what the Yerushalmi says. So this is the foretelling of the, this is Tisha B'Av and Pesach, really in Sefer Bereshit. And truth of the matter, the way, you know, I'll just pick up on the theme of our monetary dealings a little bit. The Gemara says on the simple level that Agra Detanita, the reward for a fast day, it's staka. The real reason we fast, that's Rabbi Liebtag was talking about it, not the fast. Who cares about fasting? God doesn't care. We bang our hearts. We say keynote all day. It's meaningless. It's meaningless if that's all we do. If it combines with ethical improvement, then it's meaningful. But if not, it's meaningless. So the Gemara says the reward for fasting is giving of charity. So the simple explanation, okay, you save money on food. But of course, it means much more than that. We have to be sensitive. When we fast, we realize how many hundreds of millions of people don't have food. How many people are suffering? When we, by Yishman Yishrim, when things are going well, we don't think of other people. When we're suffering, COVID has allowed us to hopefully be more sensitive. Many of us to be more sensitive to take, you know, what's the direction of our life to realize things. So that the purpose of Yom Kippur is not Yom Kippur. The purpose of Yom Kippur is Yod Aleph Tishrei. What are you going to do on the 11th of Tishrei? So the Gemara says the reward for a fast day is it's staka, but it's not just a reward for the fast day. That's why we were taken out of Egypt. Yes, we were taken out of Egypt to find the land, but always there are multiple messages in the Torah, of course. And one of my favorite to quote, it's an astounding like Rashi. But this is in Parsha Kedoshim in chapter 19, that famous chapter of Ahavta L'Reach Kamocha, Hillel, same Hillel that we didn't observe on Tisha B'Av. The problem is it's in the later part of the chapter. So maybe we don't pay as much attention. So the Gemara tells us, V'chiyak urit chem ger, you have to be very nice to strangers. Of course, you have to remember you were gerim in the land of Egypt, and do not be unjust. When you have weights, you have to have honest weights. Right? We have that in Kitetz. We have it a few times in Torah. Where it says, Eipet Tzedek, Hin Tzedek, Yelech, Avnei Tzedek, Mosnei Tzedek, 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 not Tzedek, Tzedek, Tirdov. Four times, I think, the Pasuk. Four or five times, the Pasuk says, Tzedek, 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 our weights. Why? Ani Hashem Elokecha, Mashar Tzedekam, Eretz Mitzrayim. I'm the Lord your God who took you out of the land of Egypt. And Rashi, what's the connection? You have honest weights because God took us out of Egypt. What is that? We eat matzah because God took us out of Egypt. What do you mean? We have honest weights because God. We're nice to strangers because God took us out. Okay, fine. So this is a little bit. But Rashi says, three words, Almanat King. This is why. Why did God take us out of Egypt? God took us out of Egypt so we could have honest weights. So all of a sudden we're converting what's becoming the basis of Tisha B'Av a little bit is our dealings, our monetary dealings, the fighting between Lot and the servants of Lot. They have too much money. The friction, what we do with our money. The Yerushalmi says that the temple was destroyed because of our love of money, and the Chumash seems to say that have honest weights because that's I took you out of Egypt. That's why I took you out of Egypt. So, this idea, the link between Pesach and Tisha B'Av, I'll quickly run through a few ideas that we have this in the Pesach Seder, that we have hints to Tisha B'Av. The Pesach Seder is the most elaborate, beautiful meal of the year. And, we're kings, four cups of wine. It's supposed to be the fanciest meal. We don't serve ourselves fancy tableware, everything everywhere. But we do a number of things to remind ourselves that we still have a Tisha B'Av. We begin the Seder Halach Manya. So Halach Manya already tells you we don't have a real Pesach. Hashatahacha, here we're here next year maybe we'll have. And so Halach Manya is a lament for the time of because of Tisha B'Av, we don't really have Pesach. The main part of Pesach, Yerushalayim, the Korban Pesach, the coming together of the people is missing. And that's, of course, why it's said in Aramaic. Aramaic is the land of, it's the language of the exile, right? The Mishnah is written in Hebrew. The Gemara, the language the rabbi spoke in the Talmud, was Aramaic. Aramaic is exile language. Hebrew is land of Israel language. And the Seder is all in Hebrew. Seder is all said in Hebrew, except for the first paragraph and the last paragraph, except for Halach Manya and Chagadja. And I think the idea here is that we frame the Seder, reminding ourselves, don't get too excited. At the beginning, we have a reminder, and at the end, we have a reminder, this is no Pesach. We have not lived up to what Pesach is all about, and therefore we have Tisha B'Av. Yes, we should celebrate. So the whole middle, for 6 hours in the middle, we can have everything, enjoy everything. But the beginning and the end have to be done in Aramaic. We mentioned the prayer for Gula. We invite the fact that we can even invite guests that you could not do during the time of when there was the real Pesach. I won't get into, we don't have time, Rabbi Mordechai Breuer has this beautiful long essay how our whole structure of our Seder changed with the destruction of the temple. Karpas, why do we eat karpas? So karpas used to be the introduction to the meal. They used to eat the meal right away because they had to eat the Korban Pesach by midnight. And they were afraid. That's the story of the five rabbis in Bnei Brak. So the original custom, he claims, was to have the meal first. That answers a lot of questions and how the Seder is structured and the Manishtana, etc. We did the whole Seder eating, and then we spent all night, Kolamar Belisaper, we spent all night telling the story. That there's no restriction on midnight. The restriction on midnight is eating the Korban Pesach. But once the temple is destroyed, we changed all that. No, where you're not going to eat till you do the mitzvah of Sipurim Mitzrayim, and we wanted to make it obvious. So we started the meal, and then we break up the meal. Karpas, the kids are going to ask, what's going on here? We're supposed to eat now. No, we lost the temple. We didn't get along. Lost the temple. So even the whole Seder structure is different. And something I really forgot or I didn't pay attention to, when we open up the door for Eliyahu Hanavi, at Shvach HaMatcha. So we say, the last pasuk, Tirdoch Ba'af Atash Mideim, Mitachat Shmei Hashem. So that, if you remember, is the last verse in the third paragraph of Eicha, that God should take out his anger, Tirdoch Ba'af Atash Mideim, Mitachat Shmei Hashem. They should be destroyed, wiped out our enemies. But the idea that right after the meal, right, we're heading to the second part of the Seder. The second part of the Seder, Eliyahu Hanavi, is the future. The first part, Halal, divided into two. The first part, B'tzeit Yisrael mi Mitzrayim. We left Egypt, is the past. The second part is the future. But we have to remind ourselves what the future is going to be like. We have to remind ourselves, we quote a pasuk from Eicha. Yes, we pray that we should have success, but it also reminds us that it's really in our hands what will be. So basically, either we learn, listen, we know that the most often repeated mitzvah in the Torah, the Gemara says either 36 or 46 times, is to be nice to strangers, because we were gerim in Egypt and we have to learn how to treat the ger. That's the essence of of the Torah, basically. That, by the way, that, you know, okay, we don't have time for that. I was just going to say that's where the story went. They put Rabbi Eliezer, Torah Lo B'Shamayim, we made all the miracles. If I'm right, this should be. And they put him into, they excommunicated him. It's in that story, Onat Varim, of oppressing people. That's the editor's way of the Talmud of telling us the way they treated Rabbi Eliezer was a terrible misuse, Onat Varim. When you read the story, see, it was a terrible thing. That dispute about the Tanur Shel Achnai. But anyways, it's at the end of that Gemara that the Gemara says you have to be nice to strangers 36 times, and some say 46 times. You have to figure out how it's mentioned in the Torah. So that's what Pesach is all about. If we don't do it, that's the Sinat Chinam, is the exact opposite. Sinat Chinam. So basically, Pesach and the Atbash and the on Sunday Pesach and Tisha B'Av are the opposite. So I'll end by saying, you know, the Marsha, I mentioned earlier that the Gemara in Shabbat gives seven reasons for the destruction of Yerushalayim. We don't have time to get into it. But the second reason is because they didn't say Kriyat Shema. The Marsha on that Gemara says the reason the Gemara has seven reasons is because there's 7 days of the week. And every day of the week, there's another reason corresponds to the day of the week. So the Gemara begins, Yerushalayim was destroyed because the Jews weren't careful on Shmirat Shabbat. So that obviously is talking the day on Shabbat. They begin on the seventh day of the week, like the pinnacle. And then the next day is the Jews didn't say Shema. The Marsha explains, you know why? Because they're out partying on Saturday night. Everybody's going to party and they sleep in on Sunday morning. So they forget about Kriyat Shema. It's sort of very modern Gemara. And so that's the Marsha sees that as a sin of Sunday. And I think maybe for us, maybe in Israel, not for sure in Israel, it's a lot different. But those, you know, the people who move to Israel, sometimes it's hard to give up a Sunday for some people. And Sunday's a wonderful day, and it's a tremendous opportunity, but it can also be a wasted day. It's a chance. So the sin of Sunday is to, you know, not, so he's to say Kriyat Shema, but are we mekabel o machut shemaim? Do we accept? It's not a day off. After Shabbos, it's a day to we don't have to work, at least outside of Israel for most of us, and we can rejuvenate ourselves and learn more Torah on a Sunday. And then it's interesting. I was thinking the Shir Shal Yom. You know, they look at the Shir Shal Yom on Sunday, right? Every day there's we started with the Beit Hamikdash, right? Alevim Ayum Beit Hamikdash Mi Alev Har Hashem. It's coming closer to God. Tisha B'Av is our distance from God. So you have to be clean hands, our monetary dealings. How susharim roshechem, God will open up his gates to those who are clean and have learned the message of Tisha B'Av. So there is Tisha B'Av being on a Sunday or any day of the week, there's particular messages that relate. I'll just want to do a minute review of what we discussed. We started by discussing Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi tried to get rid of Tisha B'Av, and initially the Gemara thinks to get rid of it permanently, and then he had good relations with the Romans. You don't always have to fast. The Ratzuway Mitanim, there's no persecution, don't have to fast. And of course, the rabbis wouldn't accept that. Tisha B'Av is too terrible. And then the Gemara said, no, it's Tisha B'Av was on a Saturday on Shabbat. It was pushed off. No, pushed off. Push it off. We missed it this year. It's okay. Okay, I understand we have to fast on Tisha B'Av, but not when it's on the 10th of Av. And even that, the rabbis wouldn't accept. And we gave a whole bunch of reasons why you shouldn't fast on a Friday or a Sunday. We don't want to go from Shabbos to fasting. You have to have a Malava Malka. We're afraid what the non-Jews are going to say. We're not allowed to fast on a Sunday. And yet Tisha B'Av is very different. Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur is not on a Friday or on a Sunday, but Tisha B'Av is so terrible. It upends all the rules. Why? Because we were formed. God gave us a Torah to become a nation. God told Moshe, didn't say, I'm going to give you the Torah. I'm taking it each gives you the Torah. No, I'm taking the Torah to become a nation in Israel. The Torah is just a way you become a nation. And unfortunately, Tisha B'Av is when we reversed Pesach. Tisha B'Av is the reversal of Pesach at Bash, and therefore they have to be on the same day, but it's from A to Z. And all the opposites between P Hachirot and Satam Tvilati, we can no longer speak, no, God no longer hears us. And of course, Pesach and Tisha B'Av already appear in the Torah by the story of Mitzrayim and Lot and coming down into the destruction of Lot. And that destruction is related to the monetary fightings, and that's the basis of Sinat Chinam. And unfortunately, and that's what the Yerushalmi says. No, it's on Tisha B'Av, we should pay maybe more attention to the Yerushalmi than the in the Bavli. And the Yerushalmi says the temple was destroyed because we loved money too much, and we said all the influences that it had on the Pesach Seder. And the bottom line is, let's learn the reward for a fast day is developing our sensitivity, tzedakah, developing our sensitivity to others. And that's highlighted by the fact that the most often repeated mitzvah in the Torah, Kiger Hayitim B'Mitzrayim, you were strangers. You should know what it feels like to be strangers. So let us all do that, and we can fulfill the Shir Shoyom, Mi Alev Bahar Hashem, that we'll be able to climb the mountain of God and Har Abayit, Har Moria, and we should have peace in their land, and we won't have any arguments. The Rebbe Yehuda HaNasi's desire to get rid of Tisha B'Av will be accepted by all, because there'll be no reason to celebrate. Okay, thank you very much. And I think Tamara, Dr. Spitz, I apologize if I went a minute overtime. It's really my fault. I said I wouldn't do that. So I apologize to you. And we'll take a 3.5 minute break so people can stretch. And then we'll get started. Dr. Spitz will be speaking on national and personal tragedies. I think I don't have the title right in front of me, but go. So thank you very much, everybody. Okay. Rabbanit Spitz, how are you? Nice to meet you, even though it's Tisha B'Av.
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you for this amazing opportunity. Okay. It's really a zchut to be able to share some words of Torah and some thoughts on Tisha B'Av.
We'll give people, including myself, a minute or two just to stretch. Where you are, all those in Israel can get a cup of coffee and enjoy your well fed, Baruch Hashem. But for those of us languishing in the Galut, I shouldn't say it's our fault. I mean, whatever. But those of us here, we have a number of hours to go. And thank you. Okay.